On September 11, 2001, people all over the world were horrified by the attack on the United States. For many women, their first thought was to talk with each other of peace and how to preserve it.
My daughter called me. She was at work and said, "Put your television on," because I was working at my computer.
Huguette Labelle of Canada, one of the world women leaders who met online September 24th to 27th, 2001, to discuss the current crisis.
I put the television on just prior to the second plane landing in the second tower. And I felt that the world that we have known, with all its many imperfections, the world was being changed with a sense of tremendous insecurity and the fear that the retaliation would start a cycle of vengeance and counter-vengeance. And tremendous sadness fell over me that was very overpowering at that time.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service. One of the innovations of our time is netcasting, the ability to create radio on the Internet. Feminist International Radio Endeavor, which does this regularly, has joined with Wings in a series called Peacecasts. In its second week, the Peacecast was joined by the Women's Learning Partnership, which hosted a series of conference calls for the netcast. You'll hear excerpts from those 4 hours of discussion in this half hour of Wings.
I had just landed from Durban, South Africa.
Azza Karam of Egypt directs women's programs at Religions for Peace, based in New York. She was one of many people returning that day from the UN World Conference Against Racism in Durban.
In the taxi on the way from the airport to my home, I saw the first plane go into the World Trade Center. And I thought for a second, this must be an enormous screen projection of a really stupid Hollywood movie. I mean, that was just a moment of absolute shock and denial. And the next immediate thought that came into my mind was, oh my goodness, I have just stepped out of a plane that looks exactly like this. I rushed upstairs to home, and I turned on the television, and thank heavens had the presence of mind to call my parents in Cairo and to say, I'm okay, I'm fine, but you're going to hear some horrible news. Just listen to the news. And then my parents were watching what was happening and literally weeping with just incredulity and horror.
Women's Learning Partnership, which organized the 4 days of conference calls for the Peacecast, is headed by Manaz Afkami, an Iranian exile. She first heard about the attack from Palestinian women.
When this happened, we were at the Women's Learning Partnership conference call with our partners in Palestine. Right. Someone passed a note to the participants on that side, and they told us. And of course, they were very grieved, but at the same time, they were concerned. They, being in the war zone and having daily experience of violence and terror, were very much concerned now, how is this going to affect them in terms of violence?
As former head of the Canadian International Development Agency, Huguette Labelle was very conscious of the implications for hatred.
Living in Canada, where we have a very large multicultural community from around the world, we were really taken aback by an incident where a young Muslim boy on his way to school was beaten. We feel that we're quite a tolerant society, and yet we say, if that can happen at our doorstep, then it can happen in other places in our country, it can happen around the world. And there has been a lot of concern. Groups put pages in the newspapers, and our prime minister went to a very large ceremony in the mosque to tell his compatriots, let us work together and make sure that nobody paints with a brush any one community, because nobody has monopoly on violence.
Azza Karam, Director of Women's Programming for Religions for Peace.
Everything that Religions for Peace stands for is very much coming into play right now. In other words, the necessity of distancing religions from these kinds of activities, and at the same time, the necessity of being able to rally all the religions together not only in condemnation of terror and violence, but even more importantly, in this particular time, also to speak for the need for a measured, just attitude, response, activities, so that there is a notion that there has been many people who have been wronged, but at the same time, there is also the need to proceed with two concerns in mind, the first being justice, the second being rationality, reasonableness, and the rule of law. And Religions for Peace is trying to mobilize the religious communities around the world to realize their constituencies are experiencing a great deal of lack of clarity, stereotypical images, and a lot of violent rhetoric.
I had boarded a plane from Paris to Washington, D.C. on that day.
Suher Azouni is a Palestinian and former director of the Women's Technical Affairs Committee, a coalition lobbying for women's rights in Palestine and the Middle East.
It was 5 hours after the plane took off that pilot told everybody that there is an emergency situation in the United States and the plane will not land in Washington, D.C. Instead, it will land in Canada. And we were terrified and puzzled. And then we started listening to the BBC and we learned about the horrible event that took place. And then after 6 hours of flight, the airplane landed in Halifax. And we stayed in the plane for the next 12 hours. And then at midnight, they took us out and we went in big buses to a military training camp called Aldershot. We spent there the next 2 nights in big rooms with bunker beds, mixed toilets and showers. The Canadians were wonderful to us, but there were 6 planes that landed there, and I was the only Arab among all the passengers. And I was really terrified because everybody was looking at me as if I was the accused. And the next day, one of the American ladies that shared the bunker bed with me told me that she doesn't want me to be offended, but she was scared because I came from that part of the world. I felt really bad because of all these horrible atrocities that happened in Washington and New York, and I was really so saddened by the stories, and I was following the news, and I was also saddened because it also brought more misery upon us as Arabs and Palestinians, because now we are becoming the accused, even though we really feel more with the Americans, because we have all through our lives experienced many horrors. We have been bombed, we have been shelled, and we know exactly what it is when you lose a loved one. I have to say that I have really great respect and love for the American people. And the person who told me that she was afraid of me ended up being my best friend after the trip was over. I had to go back to Washington, D.C., and also going back, I was so worried and concerned that they would really treat me badly at the airport. But no, they gave me an American flag like everybody else. I spent the last week in bed, mostly sleeping because I was traumatized. But now I'm following up on the news and hoping like-minded people who love peace and who believe in human rights get together to do something about what is happening.
Charlotte Bunch directs the Center for Women's Global Leadership at Rutgers University. She lives in New York.
I don't know how much this is making it into the mainstream media, but one of the ironies and contradictions that we live in New York is that while this is ground zero for the attacks, and also there have been a lot of very warmongering statements, at the same time, in many ways, it's been ground zero for peace activity, with very moving statements of both individuals and organizations trying to call on our own government not to make a militaristic response. Groups like New Yorkers Say No to War and many other groups have held vigils almost every day, and there's now a big demonstration planned this weekend in Washington and another one the following weekend in New York. So although the press tells us that 70 or 80% of the people support Bush, this is not my experience on the ground in New York, what I see is people really struggling to respond to this warmongering rhetoric of the president and urging him to use the United Nations, to use international human rights law and mechanisms to make a response. And secondly, I see a struggle going on nationally. We think that the Bush administration could use this occasion to curtail civil liberties for people, particularly for people of color in the United States.
Thank you, Charlotte.
Aruna Rao from New Delhi, India, a scholar studying gender and institutional change and director of the Gender at Work Collaborative.
I, too, have been struck, not, I must say, from the mainstream media, because it hasn't really been carried very much about the peace activities that are going on there in New York and in other parts of the U.S. But I saw one small clip on CNN where the parents of someone who had perished in the World Trade Center bombings were saying, "Not in my son's name." That was very moving, that someone who's lost so much could say that. What I'm hearing basically from my email connections from around the world is, how do we make this voice a larger voice?
So many countries, including Nigeria, have people who are dead or missing in these attacks. But it's seen as an attack on America and not an attack on the peoples of the world.
Ayo Obe joined the Women's Peace Cast from Nigeria, where she is president of the Civil Liberties Organization.
One thing very clear to those of us who are not in the United States is that when this is seen as an American tragedy, the whole expression of it is inclusive of America, but what seems to be a quite narrowly defined America, and exclusive of others. And I think that whilst one can't expect everybody to always say, oh, America and the rest of the world, I think that what comes through is that there are only certain people that can really be trusted. I heard on the radio there was not going to be racial profiling of passengers and so on, but we have heard passengers have been taken off planes in handcuffs for having a beard and being brown-skinned or getting up in a plane to the bathroom and so on. And I think that it's a very, very difficult thing to understand how this is going to be approached, because I think that for those of us outside, we also see that one of the things that makes America great is the fact that it has been open to new ideas, to new people, to immigrant communities. And I think that it would be a pity for the United States if it were to lose that input.
Joanna, I wanted to ask you a question about civil liberties in Canada also. I've read numerous statements from Arabs in Canada talking about ramification of undermining civil liberties in Canada. I hope this is not the case right now.
I would love to give you a very positive answer.
Joanna Kerr, Executive Director of the Association for Women's Rights and Development in Canada.
But I think that many of the similar situations which are occurring in the U.S. are also happening in Canada in terms of the loss of, or the potential loss of, certain civil liberties. There are many, many groups who are trying to speak out on behalf of any group who's going to be particularly targeted. And certainly there is not a consensus amongst the Canadian public in terms of military action. About 50% of Canadians are interested in military action. That is on the condition if they saw that it would lead to more attack or potential attacks on the Canadian public. But indeed, you're right in the sense that this needs to be very much a global strategy where women and men are really trying to come up with a much more progressive, analytical, and cautioned response. Most certainly, I feel that one of the key factors is for us to really re-examine the ways in which our governments and our leaders allow hate to thrive.
We should think of terrorism on a broader perspective.
Jacqueline Pitangui was a leader in rebuilding women's rights when the dictatorship ended in Brazil. She now directs a group called Citizenship, Scholarship, Research, Information, and Action.
I was thinking of state terrorism. We don't talk much about state terrorism, but for instance, so many countries in Latin America and in Central America, in South America, Brazil, Chile, Argentina, we have lived the horror of state violence. We live today and we see today people living under extreme poverty and people who are also submitted to a terror of losing their own civil identity, like Afghanian women. And I just want us to think of this moment, this horrible moment, where symbols of the USA were hit, but human beings lost their lives, as a moment that we can also think backwards on our own memories of insecurity and go forward.
I go back to my experience in CEDA.
Huguette Labelle of Canada, former head of the Canadian International Development Agency.
And when you look at where the conflicts in the world have been and the origin of terrorist activity, it is very, to a high proportion, in some of the poorest countries of the world. And I think that if we don't deal with the root causes of conflict, whether it is poverty, illiteracy, and nurturance of ignorance, in a sense, when you put people in a terrorist camp, they're very often isolated from the rest of the world and nourished only one kind of diet, which is one of hate. So I think that the opening up communities to each other, mutually supporting each other, I think is vital, and trying to mobilize, to suggest and press for the kind of approach which will not create a new cycle of vengeance and which will deal with the root causes of these issues.
From the work that we do, it's very clear that there's a different kind of leadership that is needed.
Aruna Rao from India.
To begin to address root causes of these symptoms we're seeing. And I've seen that kind of leadership most eloquently, and I've heard most eloquently voiced by women. And it comes from a place of connectedness. It comes from a place of understanding our differences, but also how we interconnect. And it comes from a place of compassion and a spiritual place as well. As well as being rooted in an analysis of these root causes and a quest for justice. And that's the kind of leadership that we need to make more visible. But where are the women in all of this? The voices are there on the email to some extent, but in the mainstream media in India, I don't see very much of that. And I've been quite struck by the violence of the reaction of some people on that. People whom we think are like us, who are colleagues, who are academics, who are people we read, people we watch on TV, people we may be working together with in some form or the other, have had a very violent reaction to other kinds of analysis of what is happening in the world. When the analysis is looking at a broader view of this attack as another piece of a much larger landscape. And it, for me, it brings up the question of how different we really are underneath the surface. And if we want to build broad coalitions, if we want to be able to not only put out a statement and hold a vigil, but if we want to be able to actually act to make a difference and make a difference, we need those partnerships and we need those coalitions. And to build those strong coalitions, it's very clear that we need to surface some of these large differences and talk them through and figure out where can we agree and where are we so different that talking of partnership and coalition building is simply not feasible.
I would very much like to make a connection, basically to broaden the understanding of what root causes is.
Azakaram of Egypt.
I think there's a sense among many, particularly those who espouse a more militaristic agenda, of trying to delegitimize or to dismiss any discussions of root causes. But I think it's an incredibly important discussion, if only because we can talk about the economic injustice that Huguette addressed. But I think it's also very important to add to that the fact that violence really does breed violence, and that we can either break the cycle or we can continue to enrich the cycle. And my fear, it's a very personal fear, but my fear is that if we continue along the lines that are being propagated right now, that we will not only be unable to give people the sense of justice that they demand, but that we will actually further strengthen the kinds of forces and the kind of resentment that has led to the events of the September 11th in New York City.
We as women have to reach out and get men to hear our voices and join us in the struggle.
Suher Azouni of Palestine.
We cannot wait for them to just come in and become feminist men and join in. We have to form alliances and pressure them in one way or the other so that they understand our viewpoint and they appreciate our values and what we stand for. And we can join forces in order to change what is happening.
We all believe that peaceful resolutions for all conflicts is a need this day more than any time before.
Asma Kader is a lawyer working against honor killings in Jordan and an executive committee member of the International Commission of Jurists.
This can lead to horrible massacres or more and more victims, civilians who have no reason to die just because there are political interests and there are some beneficiaries from these kind of terror actions.
Many of us in this region feel that the reaction is almost as terrifying and worse than the attack itself. This doesn't mean that we don't have sympathy.
Devaki Jain joined the discussion from Bangalore, India. Jain is a founder of Dawn, Development Alternatives with Women for a New Era, which specializes in getting perspectives of women from southern countries into global development dialogues. Jain said that the West attacking Afghanistan would be massively destabilizing to the whole South Asia region.
Afghanistan, Pakistan, they're all in South Asia. This kind of commitment to violence and war, which we hear from the United States, will distract from concerns about poverty and development and completely change political preoccupations now forever, I suppose. And I was just thinking, Menas, that it would be possible to get some kind of alliance with the American women's movement to raise the voice of sanity, to say, look, we know it's terrible, but we have to not become terrorists ourselves.
Actually, I think it's a great idea, Devaki, to reach out. This is why we're having this conversation, to think through what can we do. And I think it's a great idea to reach out to the American women's organizations, because national women's organizations have not been as connected to the international community and the international movement as we would wish, given their power and their potential. So perhaps here now is a time when we can do this, to reach out to each other and to the national women's organizations within the United States.
Charlotte Bunch, Center for Women's Global Leadership at Rutgers University.
I think that most of us have felt for a long time that the way that women work for the advancement of women in each of our cultures is by having women of the cultures and of the countries take the leadership and give guidance to the women's movement internationally on what are the critical issues within that and how to support the women who are from that particular culture, who are struggling in that regard, whether it's fundamentalist Christianity in the United States or fundamentalist Islam in Afghanistan or Hindu fundamentalism in India, et cetera. So in the same way, I think today U.S. women really need to be asking for support of the international women's movement for the struggle we are going to have to make sure that our own government doesn't use this occasion to repress the civil liberties of people of color, of women, in different ways.
Jacqueline Pitangui.
I think that over the last decades of the last century, we have seen in the international arena a fantastic movement of women's rights activists coming together nationally, coming together regionally, and coming together internationally through a movement of coalition building that really influenced the UN conferences that took place during the 90s, human rights, reproductive rights, women's rights, etc., in a UN setting. Now I think we have to go back to those coalitions, to put them in force again for peace. Peace is the word. Peace, human dignity, peace, and universal human rights.
This is Suhair. I think this is an opportunity for everybody to just try to see the world in other people's eyes. How we can really understand the problems of the poor, of the people who are deprived, of the people whose rights have been dealt with double standards, the people under occupations, and see if we can make a difference. And I think violence and war will only breed more violence. It's an endless cycle of violence. And if we try to make ways for people to give medicine to children in hospitals, to people who are deprived in so many parts of the world, to give more rights to women, for example. I fear for the women in Afghanistan who have been tortured for so long. What will happen to them now if there will be war? The children, this war will not get rid of the Taliban gang. It will really increase the suffering of the women and the children who cannot run away, who cannot escape because they do not have food, because they do not have medicine, because they do not have houses and shelters. Violence will only strengthen the terrorists. They will find more support from other fundamentalist groups, and it will not solve any problem. And maybe this is an opportunity for all of us to open our ears and hearts, listen to the suffering of the people around the world, and see if there are really some solutions other than war.
Charlotte Bunch.
The very mechanisms that I believe are the strongest for combating a terrorist act like this one, which is a crime against humanity, the creation of an international criminal court, the use of tribunals, are mechanisms that the U.S. has often undermined. And so it seems that one of the things that I would like to challenge the U.S. listeners to is to realize that we need the international world to help us, and we need to be a part of it in a way that our government has been resisting. And this may be one of those moments when there can be a shift in the dialogue that Aruna was talking about, because perhaps now people really see that isolationism won't work.
So the big question is, how can we invest in peace? And how can we make those voices visible and strong so that people will understand that there is also a very powerful, that power is not only with the military response, that there is enormous power in peace actions, in peace responses. I think this is a big challenge, and maybe for us women who have learned throughout those decades how to build coalitions out of our diversity, reaching consensus on some points, this is a moment for us to come together once more and really to support and initiate actions in this direction, building coalitions for peace.
You've been listening to World Women Leaders, who met in a series of conference calls convened by the Women's Learning Partnership, September 24th to 27th, 2001. The audio has been edited by Women's Learning Partnership and WINGS. These dialogues were netcast live as part of an ongoing series organized by FIRE, Feminist International Radio Endeavor, with Feminists for the Gift Economy and WINGS. For more about WINGS, check www.wings.org or email wings@wings.org. WINGS thanks our subscribers and supporters, including Suzette Cullen and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange. The WINGS sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.